Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
12 o'clock hour. Chase Willie and D. Mace. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason hanging out with you on a Monday. Nick Kieser behind the glass. As week zero is in the books, now it gets real with week one of college football. We say hello to Ryan McGee of ESPN and the SEC Network. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good. Is Vandy back? They were supposed to come back. Like I know they're physically back. I mean, like, are they like trying to go to class today? Because I feel like only at Vanderbilt would they even attempt that.
You know, that's a good point. I don't know. Willie is our Vanderbilt correspondent.
So are they back in class, Willie, today?
They are physically back in the States, but mentally in class, they might be floating a little bit for the classroom. I'd feel pretty good about being in class walking around after 63-10.
Hold on, Willie. They were in the state. They were in the States, even in Hawaii.
The mainland. The lower 48.
The lower 48. Yeah, okay.
The lower 48.
We had Coach on Marty McGee the Saturday before they left, and he went through their itinerary, and it all made a lot of sense except for the whole as soon as the game's over, we're flying home thing. I was like, I'll take a nap, but that's all right. He used to coach at UCLA. I said, you should call UCLA and tell them to just get used to this, because when they're making their conference trip to Piscataway in a couple of years, they'll need to know how to handle these flights.
Tennessee's going to open their schedule against Ball State on Thursday, and the big news over the weekend is Brew McCoy, the transfer wide receiver, is going to be eligible to play. Josh Heupel talked today saying that he's going to be very dominant for the Volunteers, but you add him with Cedric Tillman. How significant is that in that offense?
It's big. I mean, it's just another weapon. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, when you have the quarterback that you have, and if you manage to keep him upright more than he's on the ground, you just give him more weapons. Yeah, it's just, it can't be anything but good. So no, it's really big news. And it's funny. And you guys know, I went to UT, married a girl from Farragut. I mean, just saw my old roommates a couple weekends ago, and. And I think that landing in the first spot right out of the top 25 is perfect. Any higher than that, the already out of control expectations are probably too high. Any lower than that, you know, I think you're justified to be feel dissed. But sitting right there with a chance to move in early is I think that's a good spot to be in. And the more weapons you give Mr. Hooker, I think the better off you are.
Now, Ryan, I could be drinking the Kool-Aid. There might be something in the Kool-Aid. I don't know, but it's orange, and I'm looking at this team, and I think they're a 9-win football team. Now, with all that said, they got to go into Pittsburgh, and they got to beat Pittsburgh. They got to beat Florida. They got to go to Baton Rouge, take care of LSU, yep, which I don't think is going to be easy by any means. I would like to see them be competitive against Alabama and Georgia. They got to take care of Kentucky. There's a lot of what ifs that can happen over the course of a long season, but I do have belief in Josh Heupel that he's getting that. You asked if Vanderbilt's back, then I know you meant physically here, but I think Josh Heupel has a great opportunity to show the SEC that Tennessee is back.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's I compare this team. I've done this a lot. I compare this team to Ole Miss 2 years ago. You know, Ole Miss a couple years ago, they went I think they're right at 500, but they had a chance to win a lot of games. And at the very least, they were entertaining. And so on Monday, when you're talking about college football with your buddies, you know, you were talking about Ole Miss as if they'd won the game, like in a positive way. That's what Tennessee was last year. You know, that team overachieved, but it was also super entertaining. And they hovered around 500 a lot. But the reality was that, you know, it was all positive talk, with the exception of one goofy night with Ole Miss, and that had nothing to do with the team. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that there's the family. You mentioned Kentucky, and I'm talking about all my in-laws and all that stuff. I drive them all crazy when I say this, but I think I've said it to you guys before. The goal for Tennessee right now, and it's for someone of my age, it's incredible to say these words out loud, but the goal for Tennessee right now is not to be Alabama or Georgia. You need to be Kentucky first. You need to get to the point where you expect to win at least 9 games. Like going into the year, 9 games written in Sharpie, 9 wins, and then figure out how to get to 10 wins and figure out how to get back to New Year's Day on a regular basis. Once you establish that, once you've done what Stoops has done in Lexington, now you can prepare yourself to try to move up to that next echelon. And so it's they're getting there. The momentum feels real. And I completely jinxed everyone in Knoxville just by saying that out loud right now. I realize that. But the momentum feels, I'm with you. I think it doesn't feel thin. It feels legit.
Now, with that being said, obviously they have their, returning, their leading receiver back, obviously Hooker's back, leading rusher's back. Hooker ended up being the second leading rusher for this team last season. So it's safe to say that the offense, we should see the offense take off a little bit faster than what the defense can possibly do. Is that a safe assessment?
Yeah, and my biggest concern when you're talking about, Josh Heupel, and when you're talking about that style of offense, my biggest concern is always when you get into the second half, man, your defense has been on the field a lot. And the good news is that means you've been moving up down the field and hoping scoring points. But that's my biggest concern. And if you go back and look at, when UCF was rolling and Heupel was the guy behind that offense, their defense was gassed. And the knock on Heupel has always been that the defensive numbers are as huge as the offensive numbers. And that's bad, and so you want to stay out of track meets the best you can. So that's my concern is just depth on defense, because you're going to have to figure out a way to rotate guys in and out of there. Otherwise, they'll all be grabbing knees in the third quarter, and that's not a good sign. So that's, to me, I never had any concern with Josh Heupel knowing how to move football. That's never been, from the time he played, he's moved the football. But the concern is making sure you're giving the defense a chance, because the good news is you're scoring in a minute and a half. The bad news is defense got to get back out there for another 6.
Now, Ryan, with that being said, how close are they? Because everyone's looking at it from the standpoint of, listen, Georgia, this is Georgia's East to win. And many, some are picking Georgia to win the SEC in general. But how close is Tennessee to, because you just mentioned Kentucky, and it seemed like those two teams are sort of battling for that second spot in the East. But how close are they to Kentucky?
They're close. I think the difference is depth. I think your first 22 is just as good. I don't, I'm a big fan of the kid that's going to be behind center at Kentucky, but I'm just as big a fan of the kid behind the center at Tennessee. So I think you give me the first 22, then it's pretty even. I think the difference is depth. And again, somebody who was born in the 70s, when I'm sitting here talking about, Kentucky depth and all this other stuff, I say, it's just like talking about Alabama being wide receiver U. My brain cannot process it, but the reality is they're close. They're getting there. But again, the goal is pull up even with Kentucky first and compete for that second spot in the East, and then give yourself a chance a little bit further down the road to beat Georgia, and maybe in the meantime you sneak up on them one day.
Talking to Ryan McGee from ESPN, going around the horn with some SEC football. Let me rotate back to Vanderbilt for one question here. Ryan, outside of the football program, I don't know if you saw this yet, but they have announced a naming rights partnership with First Bank. They're actually having a press conference right now. And it appears, and we'll see how this ends up playing out, but I can see Clark Lee's wheels turning, where they're trying to get a partnership that goes beyond you give us the check, we put your name on the stadium. They're talking about internships and other ways that they can sort of get to a next level, a modern level of what a football player, what an athlete in the SEC is hoping for with NIL and all these other things.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what these sponsorships are now. And what Vanderbilt has kind of figured out that I think a lot of schools are struggling with is, a lot of schools feel like they're losing sponsorship opportunities right now because that money is going into these collectives for NIL. And so, if you figure out a way to do both and you figure out a way to get someone, because it's no secret, Vandy can use some facilities upgrades when it comes to football. If you can find somebody that's going to put their name on the building and help you get some construction cranes going, but then also figure out a way to help your guys, you know, land jobs or help your guys, you know, pick up a little endorsement money, great. And I'm a Clark Lee fan. I mean, you guys talk to him all the time. Marty and I were completely blown away. And we're 2 years in a row, our conversations with him. But what he talks about first and foremost, and unlike a lot of coaches, this is genuine, is what he said to us, he said, if you leave Vanderbilt as a football player or just as a student, and I have not done you the service of preparing you for something other than football, then, you know, I failed you. And this is part of that to me. And that's why I believe that it's really genuine, which is you're talking about internships and you're talking about, you know, you'd love to think all those guys going to play in the NFL. They're not. So, probably got a lot of bankers on that team. And so this sounds like a great opportunity for them.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. Ryan, you've got Oregon and Georgia, a featured game coming up this weekend on ABC. Oregon's number 11, Georgia's number 3, and Georgia is favored by 17. I guess that's not that surprising. But how good is Oregon?
They're really good. And, oh, by the way, you know, that historic defense that we were all bragging about, you know, last year, Dan Lanning, defensive coordinator, the guy that ran that defense, he's the head coach in Oregon now. And the Oregon linebackers are studs. Noah Sewell is a stud, and he's not the only one. So they are really good in the middle of the field. They're not going to give a whole lot up there. You know, if you're Georgia, then what you're planning on doing is just, you know, beat them to death and wear them down into the fourth quarter, as we've seen teams, Ohio State, you know, we've seen bigger, stronger teams do to Oregon over the years. But they're really good. I mean, they got skilled players all over the place, but particularly the extra layer to this game is the fact that Lanning is the coach. And there's nothing that Georgia defense is going to be able to throw at Oregon they're not going to see coming. Now, I'm not saying that Oregon's got the guy that can make the play every time, but I am saying that they're going to know exactly where that defense is going to be and when they're going to be there. So it has the potential to really be something else, but we will see. And honestly, the Pac-12 season, I'll say this about the Pac-12. You go back and look at their schedule in September over the last, you know, 10 years when we've all kind of run them down as a weak conference or whatever. It's not because they don't schedule. And we see Oregon do it. We see Utah's going to Florida. I mean, if they take care of business in the first few weeks of September, you know, they'll be in the playoff conversation because conference will look that great. But I've also actually said that very sentence right there most of the last 10 years leading into the season, and they've usually tripped all over themselves by the time we'll hit week 3.
All right, final thing for you, Ryan. Utah, top 10 team, goes into the Swamp to face Florida. Very intriguing game there.
Yeah, and it's the Pac-12 season. It really is. Everyone agrees that Utah is really good. And I'm a Kyle Whittingham guy. I always say if we had a head coach's bunkhouse stampede, right, like a battle royal wrestling,
okay,
you give me Kyle Whittingham and I'll give you the rest of the field. That dude is a stud. But the reality is they're really good. And yeah, if they were to go into Florida and beat Florida, even though we all know Florida's in transition, although I remind people all the time, number one, Billy Napier can coach. And number two, he's a Saban guy. Well, we know all that stuff. And number three, this roster that has lost some guys, this team almost beat Alabama early last season. Everyone forgets that. And, you know, Dan Mullen kind of checked out on them, and it all turned into a soap opera by the time we got to the middle of the year. But it's not like Florida doesn't have guys. So if Utah were to go in there and win, yeah. I mean, it is no overstatement to say that the Utah winning at Florida would set the Pac-12 up potentially all the way through December, because it would give them, you know, something to stand on in that room with the committee members.
Yeah, that's an important game. And then Florida comes back with Kentucky the following week. So very intriguing start for the Gators here. Ryan, as always, thanks for the perspective. Really exciting to have a week of games to look forward to. And, of course, it's always nice when Vanderbilt's 1-0 on the season.
Yeah, week one. And all you Vandy guys, I'm sure you walk around listening to us right now. Go take a nap.
Hey, Ryan, let's go race in the rain at Daytona. That seems like a good idea.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. It sounds like a great idea for everyone, especially if you're Austin Dillon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thanks, bud. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, boys.
Yep.
Ryan McGee, ESPN. Always enjoy the conversations with him because they're always very entertaining is the best way to put it, for sure. Coming up next, we'll get back into Derek's view of the Titans 53-man roster. That is all coming up here on Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. 1025-1063 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace hanging out with you. Titans roster, the cuts have to be done by 3 o'clock tomorrow. They have to get down to 53. The biggest one so far is Titans punter Brett Kern, longtime Titans punter Brett Kern, will be released, and they're going to go with Ryan Stonehouse. But, Derek, as you've kind of given your evaluation of this roster, I know that the secondary was a concern for you at the start of training camp. They've made a lot of moves during training camp with the secondary. Now, Gillespie is one that they released, and Duke of Earl corrected us.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That they get that draft pick back because it was a conditional pick.
Now, we need to know our facts. Let's say this is an interesting hypothetical for the Duke of Earl. What if they re-sign him? I'm sure it's stipulated in the contract, but he seems like a guy that could float back and forth to a practice squad. How many games would he have to play before you did have to give up the pick? That's a fair question.
You know, that's part of us knowing our facts. Yeah. So we need to figure that out.
Got to know the facts.
Lonnie Johnson was somebody they signed after he was released by Kansas City. We know Ugo Amadi is a DB that they traded for last week. I kind of feel like both of them are going to end up making the roster, but how do you view the secondary now, Derek, as we go into the regular season?
Obviously, Fulton is, I believe he will be a starter, a returning starter anyway. Caleb Farley is on the team. Elijah Molden, I believe. Roger McQuarrie. Maben. So what's that? Five defensive backs. Maybe they keep six. I don't know. But here's the interesting question. Because McQuarrie didn't play this last preseason game, Caleb Farley was the starter. Doesn't mean that McQuarrie won't be the starter, but I would love to know how close that competition truly is, because I think Roger McQuarrie has shown a little bit more than Caleb Farley. He can play inside, he can play outside. He hasn't let his measurables be a hindrance to him out there on the field. He's aggressive. He's always, as TD says, he's always in phase, meaning he's always there to make a play. And for me, Caleb Farley just he hasn't quite learned how to use his hips and movement. He does a lot of grabbing and pulling, and it rightfully so, because this guy hadn't played corner for a very long time. You know, he was out all last season. And then before that, I mean, this is a converted wide receiver who played quarterback in high school, wide receiver in college. They finally switched him over to corner. He ends up getting hurt. So he really hasn't had the time to develop as a cornerback. Hence, I believe that's why he grabs and pulls a little bit too much. Because once you get in the regular season, as you guys know, they're going to call this stuff. You know, they may let you get by a few times in preseason, especially when you're playing against, you know, second and third stringers. But once you get into the season, you're playing against those top flight guys. They're going to start calling those grabbing and holding calls, those pass interference. He needs to do a better job at playing with his hips, his lower body, getting in and out of breaks, trusting that he could put that foot down and transition. Right now, I don't think he 100% trusts. Sometimes he's a little bit over physical, where he doesn't have to be. He thinks he doesn't trust his feet that he can transition from one move to the next. So I would love to know how close that competition truly is for the starter, not making a team, but for the starter.
I think we all agree that with the number of guys they have, and they're good at this, as we said in the first hour, they have that AAA, 4A guy, practice squad player. Mm-hmm. They have a number of guys who have either played a few games for them in the past or look like they could play for them if needed. I think they're covered there, those replacement-level guys on the second wave. I think you're asking the key question is when you put your best five or six out there, and, of course, you need a couple extra guys, mm-hmm. who are the top five to seven that you really feel good about right now? Where is Elijah Molden in this? And, Derek, I want to get you to talk about, because I heard John Robinson during the telecast mm-hmm. ask this question. as it relates to McCreary and Elijah Molden, who missed basically the entire preseason in terms of, you know, what we saw on the field. I'm guessing he's going to be okay by the time the season starts. But that slot corner, right, the nickel guy. John Robinson was mentioning this, for example. He goes, you know, it's a different skill set.
Yeah.
Guarding the type of receiver that you're going to line up across from, plus the nuances of knowing, you know, there's blitz packages, exactly. For example, where you got to get to the quarterback. Molden was pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. What is McCreary like? But apparently McCreary, to his credit, has learned both spots in terms of knowing what the system is. I don't see Farley as that. Farley looks like a guy that's going to line up on the outside. Yeah. But so how do you see Molden versus McCreary, basically, and where McCreary is going to get used?
I think they're interchangeable. I think both of those guys give you an ability to you know, move one of them inside if you need to, or if you're paying a dime package, you know, you can kind of, you know, play both of those guys in the slot, or, you know, have one of them come down and cover possibly a tight end. Maybe not Roger McCreary because he's not big enough, but Elijah Molden, maybe, I don't know. But those two guys are interchangeable, and that's good because I think in this league, well, I know in this league, you need, you know, four or five good corners, because what teams are doing is, you know, they're taking their receivers and sometimes they take their best receiver and put them in a slot on certain packages. And a lot of times you can't take your best corner and slide them in a slot position to cover the slot guy. So to have someone like Roger McCreary and Elijah Molden who are used to being in that situation is a good fit for the Titans. That corner position, I mean, that slot position is a hard position to cover, man, because you got two-way goals. Typically that guy that's in the middle, he's a quick, fast, shifty guy. Or they tend to put in bigger guys. So you got to be able to not only cover the small, shifty guys, but also cover the bigger guys.
I heard him talk about Amadi, John Robinson, during the telecast. Amadi was playing. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm sure Robinson was really watching closely. They just traded for him, but he does that as well. Mm-hmm. He can play the slot corner. He can also work in at safety. And I heard Robinson, I think, say that he's been a pretty good blitzer off of that position at times. So there's that utility man that you're looking for, too, that if Hooker were to go down, or, God forbid, somebody like Byers goes down, you need those extra safeties that can go in there. So guys who figure in a package but also are capable backup at safety, those are really important. But I feel like they got a good mix of guys to cover all that. I like the defense, and you can't emphasize enough. You never have enough guys who can cover. Mm-hmm. When you're playing the Bills and you're playing the Chiefs and you're playing the Bengals, all of these teams that are going to spread you out, they're going to run a lot of packages at you. You just never have enough guys who can cover. But I like what the Titans have bringing to the table against these elite offenses.
This is just a young secondary, and that was my biggest, you know, sort of question mark with them. My biggest sort of, you know, thing that I looked at and said, man, I don't know. I don't quite know about this. I think they're a good group, but because they haven't logged in a lot of minutes on the field together, that could be a hindrance as you move forward into the season, especially in two-minute situations. You know, making sure everybody is on the same page and you know exactly what to do. But good thing they have Kevin Byard behind them and Amani Hooker that can sort of put those guys in the right position. And maybe if they do make a mistake, then Byard is over the top to help them.
Coming up next, you just hit on something, that they have a young secondary. I think there's a youth movement on this team, which in some ways is not a bad thing, but does it concern us a little bit? We will talk about that coming up next. It's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Coming up, we'll talk to Gentry Estes of the Tennessean, get his thoughts on a lot of things going on with the Vols, the Titans, and what have you. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube, and Facebook every day, presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. So I brought up the youth movement for the Tennessee Titans. And I think the good thing, in my opinion, is, you know, Willie, we remember a few years ago when David Poyle with the Predators, he made the decision to not re-sign some guys, to move on from some guys because he wanted to get younger. He knew that the window had not closed, but wasn't wide open like it was, you know, to go for the Stanley Cup. So that's where we got the term competitive rebuild, and he started that process. And that team got a lot younger. Well, they overachieved. They made the playoffs, but there are still some growing pains when you go to a lot of guys that don't have a ton of experience. The Titans is a little bit different because there is a nice mix of veterans, but you know, Malik Willis is sitting there as the backup. He's going to have an opportunity to learn behind Ryan Tannehill. You hope that all goes to plan. I look at somebody like Hassan Haskins, who is kind of in the same position, that he has an opportunity to sit behind Derrick Henry and learn. But you're going to be relying on young receivers. And Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who is a third-year guy that has slowly worked his way up on this team, but now you're asking him to do a little bit more. Is he capable of doing that? We think he is, but we're going to find out. Treylon Burks is a rookie. You drafted him to replace A.J. Brown, who is entering his prime. We all know it's well documented what happened there, but Treylon Burks, even though he may not be a quote-unquote starter on week one, you best believe that they're going to be looking to him as the season goes on to make an impact on this team. And then also the offensive line, you either were going to have a second-year guy or a rookie starting at right tackle. It would appear you're going to have a rookie starting at right tackle. So even though I don't think a youth movement is bad necessarily, but do we worry about the positions that some of these younger guys are in and if they are truly ready for that pressure?
I think your parallel to the Predators is an interesting one, because remember what David Poyle did is when he first said competitive rebuild, he sort of ended up regretting that he said that, and he changed it to competitive transition. And John Robinson hasn't really been put on the spot to name what it is that he's doing, because we all believe that they still feel like they're in a window to try to win the whole thing. But if you kind of look closely, he is doing a bit of a transition in the roster. You know, he didn't re-sign A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like he flooded the roster with veteran guys for one-year fixes. He is absolutely infusing a lot of youth into the team. They are relying a lot on young players. So it is a little bit like last year's Predators team, although it's on a level where you're trying to thread the needle of you're pushing for the future. You got a lot of young players that you need to play well, but you're still trying to win this year with a veteran quarterback in Tannehill, and you're trying to maximize the value of Derrick Henry. And remember the big theme by a lot of the pundits, this is why most people are picking the Colts, is that they feel like the Titans have overachieved. They haven't been as good as their record the last couple of years because they've won the close games. To their credit, 13-4 in one-score games. They're a well-coached team, but when people look at the talent, they don't see an elite team other than Derrick Henry, which is why the number one question being asked is what version of Derrick Henry are going to get. So you always need contributions from young players that aren't. And so here's another move that they make with the punter, right? They didn't play for this year. They played for the long term, hoping that this punter, Stonehouse, will be just as good or better.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's not this year, he will be over time. That's another symbolic thing of.
And that's another position I should have brought up.
I mean,
that's important.
So they're not just playing for this year. They're not looking at, hey, let's just go for it at all costs this year, and then we're going to collapse. It's, you know, how can we keep winning and then keep evolving? Because that's a tough thing, right, without having to break it all the way down, like the day that they released you and Samari Roll and all of the massive changes that they had to make, where they just hit the end of the era and they said, okay, we can't go any further. We got to start over.
Well, if you look at their roster, not including minus Kern, but not including your specialist punter, kicker, snapper, they only have three guys in double digits. Years in the NFL, at every key position, they are young, with possibly a veteran quarterback. Obviously, Ryan Tannehill has 11 years, but then to back up him, you know, Malik is a rookie. Logan is 3 years. You look at the running back position, you got Derrick Henry, who has logged the most years, and he's only logged 7 years, you know, but everyone else is 2, 5, rookie with Hassan Haskins. You look at the receiver position, you got rookie, second-year guy, third-year guy, and then you have Robert Woods, who's at year 10. And you can go through the whole roster, the offensive line is the same way. The elder statesman is Ben Jones with 11 years. Taylor only has 9, I believe, and everyone else falls below Taylor. So at every position, it seems like they have that veteran guy that has logged some good years, but then under them, they got a bunch of young guys. And here's why I'm not truly sold on what everyone else is saying about the Tennessee Titans in regards to, well, they're not as good as their record indicated over the last couple of years. Well, here's the deal. They were managing until those guys got experience. And, oh, by the way, they were winning because they're coached very well. Now those guys got experience. So I can say, well, no, I truly believe in the Titans, because when they didn't have experience, they were winning. Now they have experience, and I expect them to continue to win. I'm not buying into, well, they sort of overachieved. So it's going to catch up with them. Well, they were overachieving as these guys were logging years.
Mm-hmm.
The only position that I'm worried about is the cornerback position. But other than that, I think this team has managed to keep the ship going in the right direction while these guys earned that experience that they needed.
The Titans have made it official. They have sent out the release that they will, in fact, release punter Brett Kern. General Manager John Robinson saying, quote, "Brett embodies everything we look for in players for the Tennessee Titans. He's been at the top of his game for a long time in this league, has been an outstanding leader for us, and has been an excellent representation of the Titans in our community. I'm blessed to have worked with him, and on behalf of the entire organization, we wish him all the best moving forward." Kern is was the longest tenured Titan, and get this, guys, in the franchise, going back to Houston, only two other players have played more regular season games for the Titans than him: Bruce Matthews and Elvin Bethea.
Mm-hmm.
He's played the most games of anyone since the team became the Titans, with 177 consecutive games played from 2009 to 2020. And that was the second longest streak in Titans Oilers history behind, you guessed it, Bruce Matthews.
Hmm. Yeah. Significant. Very uh-huh. significant. Big piece of the history, especially of the Tennessee Titans. When you think about it, I mean, he's a guy that will not be forgotten at all. So,
here's a – I have a trivia question mm-hmm. today. I'll leave it at that. I just got what the trivia question
is. Are you saying you'd like to ask today?
I will ask the question.
Trivia question? So that's at 1:30 today?
We'll do that at 1:30.
Okay. Bank that one. This is good. Final thought on the window, mm-hmm. right? Because I think we're seeing what they're doing, the plan. It's a transition, to use that Predator term, to where when they moved on from A.J. Brown, they're going younger where they can. They are also paying Derrick Henry big money this year,
mm-hmm.
paying Ryan Tannehill big money this year, $38 million, right? They could have broken that up, both of those contracts. They could mm-hmm. have pushed the pile back. They're going with that. Bud Dupree, huge cap figure mm-hmm. this year. I think it's to say, okay, we're in the window, but let's set ourselves up so we're not paying a ton of dead money on the other side. And so, to me, the window changes, or the era changes, the day that they move on from Tannehill and Derrick Henry. I don't even know if it'll be the same year. But after this year, there's going to be a big moment of what do we do at those two positions. But in the meantime, you're trying to win this year. See where it goes.
So my question is, how long do we think this window is open?
To me, the window is over when you're moving on to a different quarterback.
Yeah. which
because I think they've shown that you can move on to another running back and still get decent production. You're not going to have a special guy necessarily like Henry, but you have maybe a less expensive guy and more money to address other things on the roster and still get decent production. But when you change quarterbacks, mm-hmm. that's a whole different deal.
Well, the window closes when they stop buying into what Vrabel is preaching. That's when the window closed. I think he said he's been on enough organizations. He was a part of, you know, a franchise that will be considered probably the greatest franchise in football when it's all said and done because of championships and their consistency. But if you look at those places, whether it's, you know, New England or Pittsburgh, Kansas City, he played for Kansas City for a while. The underlying theme with all those teams is they know how to sort of what was Poyo's thing, a rebuild, a competitive rebuild.
Transition.
Yeah, transition. They know how to competitively transition each 2 or 3 years.
Yep. It's not the boom exactly, and bust.
Absolutely.
That it used to
They're
be.
Always going to be good. So the window, as long as you're always a good team and well coached, your window is always open.
I'll say this, Willie or Villy, Viking Matt wants to know what the plan is. So if you could help us with that, that would be great. Coming up next, Tom Brady has spoken. You'll hear from the Bucs quarterback. Coming up next, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 125, 106.3, the game.
It's all personal. You know, everyone's got different situations they're dealing with, so we all have really unique challenges to our life. And, you know, I'm 45 years old, man. There's a lot of shit going on. So, you know, you just got to try to figure out life the best you can. And, you know, it's a continuous process. So.
That is Bucs quarterback Tom Brady talking about his 11-day absence that he took from training camp, which means he missed the joint practices with the Titans and the preseason game. Welcome back in, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. We reviewed the trivia question during the break. Oh, it's going to be a good
it's
one.
It's an outstanding question.
So it's a doozy.
It's a doozy.
It's a humdinger.
But Tom Brady, addressing his absence, he hadn't done it to this point. He says, quote, I'm 45 years old. I got a lot of bleep going on. And I'll tell you what – I'll just say it. I'll tell you what I think.
I think we think the same thing.
We think
thing.
The same yeah. thing. I think Giselle's pissed he came back.
I mean, it
just
sounds
to put
funny,
it bluntly,
but
– I think that he – because here's the problem. When a guy retires mm-hmm. and you say, I want to spend more time with the family, and then you come out of retirement, everybody's going to go, well, what happened to the family?
Yeah.
Like, so I think that, and it could be they had a trip planned or, you know, whatever. And he basically said, hey, I'll come back, mm-hmm. but I've already promised we're going on this trip. Mm-hmm. And everybody understands. Now, he's Tom Brady. He doesn't need the preseason. He really doesn't need training camp. I mean, he could have pulled a full-on Brett Favre and come out of retirement this week and you've been fine.
Yeah.
But that was my takeaway, is that I got a lot of bleep going on. She's mad that he decided to come back.
Well.
Which I get.
I understand that. Listen, I know that look that he has on his face. There are a lot of people that, a lot of men know that look. Especially when you're doing something on one hand that's so stressful, you enjoy it, but so stressful. But then on the other hand, there are things that are going on that don't nobody know about. And you try to keep things balanced. So, you know, you just try to stay even keel. You try to keep your head above water. And he seems like he's stressed out. Seemed like he lost more weight than what we saw in, you know, at the beginning of camp. And yeah, it has nothing to do with a trip. I tell you that right now. It has nothing to do with a trip. It has a lot to do with possibly, you know, listen, you said you're retiring. Like you said, Chase, you said you're retiring. You want to spend more time with the family. That was your big thing. Well, when you got an opportunity to spend time with the family, you didn't want to. That's not really what you wanted to do. And then you chose to go back to football. So is it us or is it football? Which one of it is? Which one is it? You've played, you've lived out your dream. And she's probably lived out hers as well, mm-hmm. being a model and everything else. But you lived out your dream. I'm no longer doing the things that I love doing. I'm at home with the kids. You said you're retiring because you wanted to spend time with the kids. Now, all of a sudden, you don't want to spend time with us.
Right.
What's going on here? You know, there's more things going on, and it's stressing him out. That's why he had to leave and go take care of whatever it is. I can only assume what it was, and it wouldn't be fair for me to say that on radio, but I can assume what it is, and it has to do with him and his wife.
Sure.
But it stresses you out, and, you know, maybe, just maybe, his sort of peace or his space is on the football field, where we were always taught this. Everybody in this locker room, there are 53 men with 53 problems. So, and probably 53 men with 55 problems, because one guy may have more problems than the other. But there are
50, at least three guys have two problems.
Herm Edwards. One car, one house,
one of everything.
One girl, yeah. One of everything.
One of everything. One problem. But that's not the way it goes. There's 53 men, and there might be 55 or 58 problems. But we will always listen. We have a job to do. When you walk through that door, that suitcase you have of problems, put it at the door, walk into this building, concentrate on what you're doing. When you leave the building, pick that suitcase up and deal with it, you know?
Would you be concerned that this is going to affect him this year?
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it will, because he has gotten to. As athletes, we compartmentalize everything. Like I said, 53 guys, 53 problems. We are conditioned to compartmentalize a lot of things. You know, this has its space, this has its space, and this has its space. When I'm in a football building, this is what I'm thinking about. I got to put that thing in a suitcase. So I don't think this will affect him. I would be surprised if it affected him. Now, you know, there may be other things, age, and he may get hurt or something that may affect him. But I don't think what he's going through, I think he's so much of a perfectionist on the field that he will block that stuff out for 3 hours.
But the fact that he was away completely for 11 days sort of goes against everything that he has done before, just that dedication.
So this had to be really big.
Yes. And so you do wonder that. And look, this is, it's his private stuff.
Exactly.
We can all definitely have our guests, probably, you know, something family related. Sure. The other thing that was noticeable to me is he looked like he had, I don't know, lost weight? Is that fair to say?
Stress.
He's a different look to him.
Stress, Willie. Stress.
You're saying stress.
It's stress.
My thought was, you know, the TB12, the supplements, things like that. That you, I mean, when you're 45, you got to have some tricks up your sleeve to stay physically able to maneuver, to get the ball there. I mean, I've always wondered. I mean, he's a freak of nature to begin with, but you gotta combat that. It's father time, man. We're talking about 45. We're not talking about 40. We're talking about 5 years older than 5 years past 40. When he was 40, I was saying, there's no way. He's not, but he has done this. So I'm just like, what has he done to his body? What price has he paid to play this long? So all of these are just fascinating questions, and we're going to watch it play out here. The division looks very winnable. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would have come back unless he thought he can win. They have a new coach. They got offensive line issues. There's a lot of challenges in front of him here, but we'll see how it goes.
His sanctuary is the football field.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I
and is that a healthy thing? Like, everybody at some point has got to transition to post-football life. You had to do it. Everybody has to do it at some point.
But no matter who you are, Willie, the great ones or the not-so-great ones, you still have that transition is still hard for you. His sanctuary is the football field. That's where he thrived. That's where he has total control, is the football field. Nothing else. He has total control over that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And he did this whole man in the arena thing that was kind of looking back on his career, and she's in it, mm-hmm. and everybody's happy, and it just like, okay, he's retiring. Like it felt like it was going to happen, and then he actually does it, and now he goes back on it, and so it does come off as a little phony. Now, a guy like him, I wasn't surprised, mm-hmm. because like you said, football is his sanctuary. And so he's been married to football longer than he's been married to Giselle. Mm-hmm. But now he's got to figure that out. He's got to figure out what the balance is. And look, I have no doubt that Brady's mm-hmm. going to figure this out. He's dealt with deflated balls before. He can do that again. So
life,
I think he'll be fine.
Life can be the ultimate cloak for you.
That went really over your head, didn't it?
What's really what's going on.
You just
on.
Ignored
what,
that.
What did you say?
Come on, man. I'm sorry.
These are the jokes.
These are the jokes. I'm sorry, Jace.
Jace has got jokes.
Life can be the ultimate cloak for what's really going on. Yeah, it could be deflated as well.
That's what it is.
And this is
or in Brady's, you know, football is his cloak. It's like football hides everything else that's going on in his life.
But that's where, at least from afar, like all of us get to just watch, and mm-hmm. he entertains us. He's the greatest of all time. And we love knowing what the next chapter, with the excitement of what's the next chapter going to hold. I just hope that everything that he's done, that you don't pay so much of a price behind the scenes that he regrets it.
Sometimes
coming
you
back.
Do.
You do pay
Sometimes
a price.
You do, yeah.
No doubt. Coming up next, Gentry Estes from the Tennessean is going to join these guys. I have some suit duties, so I will bid you adieu and be back tomorrow, but that is all coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No.